Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso. Today, our show is packed full of important local news. The director of SANDAG has stepped down, and we'll have reaction from Lemon Grove's SANDAG representative. The county is considering changes in ambulance services and wants to hear from the public. We'll tell you about some meetings coming up this week where you can have your voice heard. Also hear why some rural residents are upset over what they say are inadequate efforts by the county to reach out to residents in rural and mountain communities on this and other recent issues. We'll have news about a city councilman who has filed a complaint alleging discrimination against the city of El Cajon over its ban on use of personal electronic devices by council members. From La Mesa, hear about a developer who is threatening to sue the city if a controversial apartment project is not approved. Next up, we also have a special announcement today about the launch of our very own East County Dining Club, launching this week with a party Friday night, and you're all invited. You can find the delicious details at eastcountymagazine.org to benefit our nonprofit news. Next up, hear about a national monument that's been saved and several others in California that remain threatened by the Trump administration. On Tribal Beat, we have sad news today about a mother in Santa Isabel who, thanks to the persistence of a local sheriff's detective, has finally learned the fate of her son, who's been missing for more than 20 years. From Public News Service, hear how minorities are driving growth in rural California communities. On Green Scene, learn how you can submit comments on the county's proposed climate action plan. On part two of our show today, Helen Ofield from the Lemon Grove Historical Society will share some colorful history in a piece titled Driving the Snakes Out of Lemon Grove in honor of the city's 40th anniversary. On Destination East County, hear about top festivals and events coming up across our region, from an Apple Days festival in Julian to powwows, a music fest, and more. Learn why some are criticizing the RAISE Act as racist in a Public News Service report today. Then hear about county apps for your cell phone, including one that lets you instantly report problems ranging from potholes to graffiti. We'll also have tips for motorists to help you keep children safe as they head back to school. So stay tuned for all of these stories on the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
The San Diego Association of Governments Board accepted the resignation Friday of Executive Director Gary Gallegos. His resignation follows claims that SANDAG misled voters on projected revenues of Measure A. A Voice of San Diego investigation has also alleged that staff did not disclose key facts to SANDAG directors and that agency leadership ordered staff to hide evidence by deleting emails and hiding documents. Some of those points are disputed, however, by SANDAG member Jerry Jones, a Lemon Grove council member. Jones says he asked a special investigator if the investigation found any evidence of a pattern to deceive the public on projections for Measure A, and that the answer was no. He adds, the report made it clear that there was a difference of opinion among the staff and poor judgment leading up to the election, but no smoking gun. He adds that the special investigator indicated there was no evidence that management ordered staff to delete email. Some documents were centralized in a single location, and the board has authorized a forensic investigation into that server, said Jones, adding that poor judgment may yet lead to consequences in that regard. The scandal resulted in state legislature weighing a bill to reorganize SANDAG and require outside financial oversight. That measure, AB 805, has drawn sharp criticism from some East County representatives who have called it a power grab of its own. The measure by San Diego Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez doesn't just call for outside oversight of SANDAG, it also shifts power away from smaller cities, including those in East County, and gives the cities of San Diego and Chula Vista majority control of the board. Jones says that handing control of SANDAG to Chula Vista and San Diego will not fix the problems pointed out in the report, and he adds, I believe that the path the board set forth after hearing the report needs to be given time to work. In his resignation letter, Gallegos says it is with a heavy heart that he reached the decision to resign, but that the region is facing change, and that change is going to require a new leadership to build consensus and position for San Diego to take advantage of future opportunities. SANDEG Chair Roberts issued a statement praising Gallegos for what he called an amazing legacy on projects ranging from trolley extensions with stops on major college campuses to bicycle and pedestrian projects, the Sprinter train, and binational improvements. But Roberts acknowledges that Gallegos' departure is necessary to fix a broken financial forecasting model, and a national search for candidates will be conducted to find a replacement to lead SANDEG. Jones suggests that Chairman Roberts would join Gallegos in resigning to let the agency make reforms and move forward. While reforms are needed from within, Jones says he believes that Gallegos' replacement should be an outsider. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
Last month, rural residents voiced frustration when the county announced meetings on outsourcing animal services with only 24 hours notice before the only meeting in East County, as we reported. Now, rural community leaders are again voicing frustration that public meetings set for this week on how to improve ambulance services in the unincorporated areas were again announced on short notice. All the meetings are slated midday on weekdays in rural towns, when most working people can't attend and many are working far away in San Diego. Moreover, rural planning group chairs say they were left in the dark and were never notified by the county of these meetings. Billy Joe Jannon, chair of the Campo Lake Morena Community Planning Group, told us, when informed of the ambulance services meeting in Campo by our reporter, "This is the first I've heard anything of this. The county doesn't seem to be interested in doing anything with planning groups anymore." She added as an example, "The animal control restructuring has been a virtual secret out here, and my efforts to get a presentation have yielded nothing but evasion." Janet added pointedly, "I suppose they think that putting it on the county news page is enough these days. When they get a poor turnout, they can blame it on apathy." Donna Tisdale, chair of the Boulevard Planning Group, responded that she had not heard about the ambulance services meeting either until we contacted her. While the county is setting meetings in rural towns rather than only downtown, the short notice, inadequate effort to get word out, and weekday scheduling largely negate that effort. East County Magazine has asked Supervisor Diane Jacob if the county could consider adding meetings on weekends or evenings. The lone meeting on animal services in East County was held in Ramona, too far away for most people across our broad region to travel. Oddly, no meetings were scheduled anywhere near Potrero, where many residents had voiced concerns over animal services during the border fire. The agency has said it was understaffed and underfunded to meet all the needs during that fast-moving brush fire, where many animals were left stranded within the evacuation area. Similarly, after the border fire, some residents complained that meetings on border fire complaints were held during daytime hours when rural residents who work far away could not possibly attend. Now, the meetings on ambulance services in the unincorporated areas are more numerous and include several in East County. But the notice came too late for weekly media outlets to get notices out. Also, the Jamul area along Highway 94, a place where residents have raised concerns about ambulance response times, as we've reported, was not provided a convenient venue for residents to share their concerns. Some East County boards, recognizing that most residents now work and many work outside of East County, have made changes to their meeting times. Helix Water District recently changed its public meetings from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. La Mesa and El Cajon alternate meeting times, with at least one meeting a month held in the evening, so that working people can attend. La Mesa is considering a proposal to change all of its city council meetings to 6 p.m. If the county wishes to do the right thing and provide rural and mountain residents with meaningful opportunities to provide input on serious issues such as outsourcing animal services or making changes to ambulance services where lives could be at stake, it would be best for the county to schedule meetings on evenings and weekends when working people can attend, and to provide at least 10 days' notice so that all rural media outlets, most of which are print weeklies in East County, could inform their members. All community planning group chairs should also be notified of county meetings in their communities and on issues that affect their communities. This is Miriam Raftery, and next up, Gene Carpenter will have details about those possible ambulance service changes for those of you who may want to show up and speak out.
The County of San Diego wants to hear your ideas on how to improve access to and quality of emergency medical services provided in San Diego County's backcountry, which includes rural, mountain, and desert communities. The county has seen huge population growth over the past 30 years, including changes in where people live and work, as well as changes in technology used to dispatch ambulances. The county has also recently changed ambulance providers in some unincorporated communities. Andy Parr, Emergency Medical Services Administrator for the county, says the county is conducting a study to look at how to ensure that the closest and most appropriate resource can be sent to the scene of a medical emergency in the backcountry. The right service to the right person at the right time. The county's Office of Emergency Medical Service is hosting a series of forums to hear from the public. Upcoming forums in East County will be held at the Julian Library on Tuesday, August 22nd at 10 a.m. in the Campo Village Library on Friday, August 25th at 10 a.m., and at the Crest Branch Library on August 25th at 2 p.m. If you can't attend on the scheduled community forums but want to learn or submit comments, you can email lilia.smith@sandiegocounty.ca.gov, Lilia, L-I-L-I-A dot S-M-I-T-H, or you can call 858-505-6382. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
This is Miriam Raftery with a local government report from El Cajon. El Cajon Councilman Ben Colasso has filed a discrimination complaint with the State of California Department of Fair Employment and Housing against the City of El Cajon. The action follows last Tuesday's 4-1 vote, with Colasso opposed, affirming that the only electronic device permitted to be used by council members during city council meetings are city-provided Apple iPad tablets. The iPads provided to members of the City Council will be configured to only allow access to city official websites and access to the city's financial budget documents and municipal codes, but other internet sites will be blocked. The move to address use of personal electronic devices during council meetings by council members came after Mayor Bill Wells expressed concern several months ago that private communications may happen between council members themselves and the public during council meetings. The City of Escondido is the only other San Diego County municipality that has taken similar steps to stop use of personal electronics by council members while seated at the council days. According to Teresa Collins, communications officer for the City of Escondido, Escondido's Mayor Sam Abed and the City Council made the issue a priority to comply with California's Open Meetings Law, also known as the Brown Act. The Brown Act does prohibit communications by a majority of members directly or through intermediaries to discuss any item before the legislative body. According to the First Amendment Coalition, this includes emails or text messages. Collins said that the Brown Act requires that any text or email between council members or staff during a meeting must be made public. In addition to the City of Escondido, the cities of Palm Desert, Lake Elsinore, and Anaheim have adopted rules banning or limiting city council members from using personal cell phones and electronic tablets during meetings. So what are the chances that Councilman Colasso could win a discrimination suit against the city because he was not allowed to use a personal electronic device during council meetings? We spoke with Josh Gruenberg, a leading San Diego attorney who specializes in employee discrimination law, and he replied, zero. This is not discrimination, he told East County Magazine. The law prohibits discrimination based on age, race, sex, national origin, religion, medical condition, and other things. But the attorney said, taking notes at a meeting or having your head down looking down at your iPhone is not one of the protected characteristics of discrimination law. During last week's council meeting, El Cajon City Attorney Morgan Foley directly questioned Colasso about the reasons behind his threat to file a discrimination complaint. He asked Colasso, and discrimination is because you can't use an iPad like anybody else, or is it because you're being told you have to use this particular iPad? Colasso replied that he believed his political party affiliation as the only Democrat on the council could be grounds for a complaint, although state law does not list party membership among the protected classes. Colasso noted that he is the only council member who regularly uses an electronic device to take notes during meetings and said that transferring notes between a city-issued iPad and his own personal device would be, quote, too burdensome. East County Magazine has asked Councilman Colasso for comment, but he did not respond to multiple inquiries.
This is Gene Carpenter with a local government report from La Mesa. La Mesa's city council deadlocked in a 2-2 vote last week on a proposed apartment development on the site of the former Little Flowers Haven convent site on La Mesa Boulevard. Councilman Colin Parent had recused himself because of his home's proximity to the property. Now, an attorney for the development, Pathfinder Silvergate La Mesa LLC, has sent a letter threatening to sue the city if council does not reconsider its decision. The project drew strong opposition from neighbors concerned about parking in their older neighborhood with narrow streets and single-car garages that already force residents to park extra cars on the street. The developer sought to take advantage of a state law that encourages construction of affordable housing. State law, under a density bonus, allows a property owner to provide fewer parking spaces than a city normally requires in exchange for setting aside 10% of the units designated as affordable or within reach of those earning 80% of the area's median income. For this project, that means Silvergate would be required to provide only 186 parking spaces instead of the 260 spaces that La Mesa law normally requires. Silvergate agreed to provide 193 spaces, slightly more than state law would mandate. Building an underground parking lot isn't possible due to existing infrastructure. The developer commissioned 3 parking studies and claimed there would not be a parking shortage, drawing jeers from the large crowd that packed City Hall. Residents said there is already a parking problem in their community and also voiced safety concerns over residents having to cross 4 lanes of traffic without a crosswalk. Ian Gill, a spokesman for the developer, noted its proximity to mass transit and suggested that some tenants would not need vehicles. Bike lockers and a bike sharing program would encourage bicycle use by tenants. The developer offered to have leases for tenants prohibit parking on certain residential streets, also offering to add a privacy fence and trees to ease neighbors' concerns over views and preserve a building with a historic facade. The builder said the project would provide customers for nearby businesses, as well as $400,000 a year in property taxes to benefit local schools, police, and fire. Resident Susan Wayne says she knows some redevelopment of the property is inevitable. We are not opposed to a residential development, but to a parking variance that deviates from the La Mesa Municipal Code, she told the council. The city's Design Review Commission had recommended approval of the project. Council members Christine Alessio and Guy McWhirter agreed, voting to allow the development. But Councilman Bill Baber and Mayor Mark Arapastathis voted no, blocking the project from moving forward. The letter from Silvergate's attorney after the vote states that if the council does not immediately vote to reconsider its decision, the company will immediately file a lawsuit, which could be very costly to the city's taxpayers and voters. Council met in closed session Thursday morning to discuss the pending litigation.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine Show. We're proud to announce the launch of the East County Dining Club. Each month, we'll be taking you to a different restaurant where you can savor cuisines from around the world without leaving East County. Our premier party to kick off our East County Dining Club will be this Friday night at Fabrice's French Country Restaurant in Hamul, and you're all invited. Our event features an all-you-can-eat French feast, wine tasting with Toast of the Coast winner Deerhorn Valley Vineyards, thousands of dollars in prizes, music, and surprises. This event benefits our nonprofit news reporting in the public interest for the East County Magazine radio show and our East County Wildfire and Emergency Alerts. RSVPs are required, so please visit our website at eastcountymagazine.org where you can get full details and reserve space, or call 619-698-7617. Bon appetit, and we hope to see you there on Friday.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Santa Snow National Monument in the Southern California Desert will not be reduced or rescinded, a decision announced by Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke on Wednesday. 6 other national monuments in California and dozens of others around the country, however, remain in the crosshairs until Zinke's final recommendations are made public next Thursday. Daniel Rossman with the Wilderness Society says he's glad Santa Snow was spared and hopes to see the same result for places such as Berryessa Snow Mountain, Mojave Trails, Giant Sequoia, San Gabriel Mountains, Cascade Siskiyou, and Carrizo Plain National Monuments.
There have been more than 2.7 million comments put into this process for preserving the status of our national monument. It seems arbitrary that the secretary is releasing monuments here and there and not listening to the overwhelming will of the American public.
President Trump has called for a review of the monuments that would establish the smallest boundaries consistent with the protection of natural treasures. Danielle Segura with the Mojave Desert Land Trust wants to see Mojave Trails protected, but says its fate is in question because Zinke's number two at Interior is a former lobbyist for a company that wants to drain water from the desert aquifer and send it to coastal cities.
I think that we have reasons to be worried about that. We would like to see the desert as a place not to extract resources, but to allow for a vibrant tourism economy.
State Assemblywoman Cecilia Aguiar-Curry, who represents the area near Berryessa Snow Mountain National Monument, says she consulted with stakeholders for many years before President Obama designated the monument.
I worked with cattle ranchers, farmers, horseback associations, off-road vehicle associations, the Wilderness Society, the Sierra Clubs. We've worked with everyone to make sure we had ample public outreach, that people understood what the importance is to save this beautiful area.
The Antiquities Act gives the president the ability to create national monuments, but it does not explicitly permit the chief executive to revoke them. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is East County Magazine's Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities.
A Santa Isabel mother, Angela June Christman, has traveled a long road of frustration that ended in heartbreak on August 10th. That's when Detective George Chrysler with the San Diego Sheriff's Department gave her the sad news that her long-lost son, Sean Lone Wolf Christman, known to his friends as Coyote, drowned in Lake Michigan back in 1993. For Angela Christman, 24 years after she last saw her missing son, Sean, the tragedy was doubly painful, since she had earlier endured the drowning death of her younger son, Coyote's brother John, who died in 1981 after falling into the La Jolla River when he was just 2 years old. Angela remembers Coyote, born in 1973, as a free spirit who had a lot of friends. He had his share of troubles, leaving home in 1991 to follow the Grateful Dead band to their concerts, selling macrame belts and other items to support his wanderlust lifestyle. He would call his mother on occasion, such as for Mother's Day and birthdays, but in 1993, 2 years after he left home, the calls stopped. At first, Angela hoped he had simply made a new life for himself elsewhere. She tried contacting sheriff's deputies to file reports more than once through the years, but says they didn't follow up on her concerns. Meanwhile, Angela was contacted by some of Coyote's travel buddies who he met along the way. She learned they had traveled in a van to Grateful Dead concerts around the country, ending up in Gary, Indiana. And that's when Coyote went missing. Finally, in 2016, Sheriff's Detective George Chrysler took on the case. He followed up leads, cross-checked fingerprints and other information with law enforcement agencies across the nation, including the FBI. Eventually, Detective Chrysler made contact with the Cook County Coroner's Office, and that led to the identification of Coyote's remains. Apparently, on leaving his travel mates, Coyote went swimming in Lake Michigan near Chicago and drowned. His body washed ashore in June 1993. But because no identification was found on his body, he was buried on December 7, 1994, as a John Doe in a pauper's grave outside Chicago. Detective Chrysler told East County Magazine, "I was happy that we were able to find out what had happened to Sean, which gave me a sense of resolution, but I also felt sad because this is not the news a mother wants to hear." Angela Christman describes the anguish of not knowing the fate of her son for 26 years as like carrying your soul in your heart. She has established a GoFundMe page to pay for her son's body to be exhumed from the cemetery in Illinois and returned to Santa Isabel, where she hopes to hold a memorial service and bury Sean Lone Wolf Coyote Christman with other family members on the reservation where he was raised. "I'm trying to find a way to bring my son back home. I would be very grateful to accompany his journey home," Angela told our reporter, Paul Cruz, and she added this message for her son, whose life was extinguished far too young, so far away. "I'm so sorry, Sean, to have left you there so long. Your sister and I are trying to bring you home as soon as possible," she says. You can help her do that by making a donation at the Bring Coyote Back Home page on the GoFundMe site. Reporting for East County Magazine in Santa Isabel, this is Miriam Raftery.
All but one rural county in California has added population over the past quarter century, and a new report shows that minorities are a big part of that boom. Analysts from a nonpartisan research firm called Headwaters Economics looked at census data from 1980 to 2015 across the West and found that 99% of counties saw an increase in Hispanics, other people of color, and foreign-born residents. Kelly Pale, a co-author of the report, says Sierra County, north of Lake Tahoe, lost 2% of its population, but an influx of minority residents has been a stabilizing force.
In places where overall population is decreasing, minorities are slowing that trend of shrinking communities and helping to sustain local economies and keep school districts open.
As of 2014, Hispanics became the largest ethnic group in the Golden State, which now has the sixth largest economy in the world. All but one of California's rural counties are growing, many due to an increase in outdoor recreation and tourism. Calaveras County's total population is up 116%, with many newcomers working at the dozens of newly legal marijuana growing operations that have popped up in recent years. Pale says that minority families are particularly beneficial to towns with an aging general population.
Because minority populations tend to be younger on average than non-Hispanic white populations, they inject youth and cultural diversity and economic vitality into places, some of which would otherwise be shrinking.
California is home to more than 15 million Latinos, but the state has always had a significant Hispanic and Native American population, going back even before the period when the lands were part of Mexico. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Jordan Damu with a Green Scene Report. The County of San Diego has released the Draft Climate Action Plan. The public has until September 25th to make comments on the draft plan, which is designed to cut greenhouse gases in the county's unincorporated communities as well as those related to county government operations. It seeks to meet state requirements for renewable energy with actions that balance environmental, economic, and community interest while taking into account the county's largely rural character. That balance between state mandates and rural character has been a bone of contention in the past, with some rural residents staunchly resisting industrial-scale wind and solar projects that scrape bare large tracts of habitat. And in the case of wind, add towers 500 feet tall that could create problems from noise, infrasound, and flashing lights. The draft plan and a draft supplemental environmental impact report can be reviewed on the County Planning and Development Services Climate Action Plan webpage. After the public review and comments period end, the San Diego County Planning Commission and the San Diego County Board of Supervisors will hold hearings early next year. The draft plan was created with input from local residents and more than 50 stakeholder groups. For more information about the draft plan and links to submit your comments, you can visit the San Diego County Planning and Development Services Climate Action Plan webpage.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
This is Helen Ofield from the Lemon Grove Historical Society bringing you the sounds of history.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso, in the heart of East County. Today, my very special guest is Helen Oldfield. She's the president of the Lemon Grove Historical Society and author of Images of America, Lemon Grove. She's an award-winning writer and producer for national and local films and television, as well as for print and online news media. A member of the San Diego County Historic Site Board and the Society of Professional Journalists, she is also a longtime historic preservationist. And today, she is here to talk about the 40th anniversary of the city of Lemon Grove. And today, Helen is going to be sharing with us a tale of snakes and skullduggery, the history of how the city of Lemon Grove came to be. Helen, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam. Pleasure to be here. Got an interesting backstory for you. How did Lemon Grove become an actual city? On July 1, 1977, there had been four rolls of the dice since the 1950s, and the fourth one was the charm. We didn't have St. Patrick to drive the snakes out of Lemon Grove, but the town was used to going it alone, and it had a dream. The town yearned to become a bicentennial city. Remember that? The USA turned 200 in 1976, and the whole country was awash in flags and Minutemen and George Washington bumper stickers. Little Lemon Grove labored to get on the June 1976 ballot so people could vote up or down. Do we want to be a city? Yes, no. Polling showed a win was assured. That meant we'd officially become a city on July 4, 1976, on the 200th birthday of the Declaration of Independence. Oh, wow! Our big lemon was already a 4th of July baby, dating from 1928. We'd have the whole package. So, who robbed us of the chance? Yeah, pals, it was La Mesa. They wanted to annex 1.17 square miles of the unincorporated Vista La Mesa neighborhood, an area already designated to become part of the new city of Lemon Grove. But La Mesa and San Diego allegedly had a gentleman's agreement that La Mesa would claim Vista La Mesa because, according to La Mesa Mayor Paul Fordham, Route 94 is a natural boundary line. But Lemon Grove had its own St. Patrick in the person of Mike Gotch. Remember Mike? Super nice guy. Mike was assistant director of LAFCO. LAFCO, L-A-F-C-O. That's a mouthful meaning Local Agency Formation Commission. Lemon Grove was the local agency, and it was trying to form into a city. Mike Gotch and LAFCO responded to the will of the people and voted to give Lemon Grove the Vista La Mesa area just north of the 94 because it was in the new Lemon Grove Fire Protection District. La Mesa was cheesed off, to put it mildly. How come Lemon Grove was a new fire district? Answer, because the county bailed. It used to provide fire protection through the U.S. Forestry Service, but it didn't want the cost or the responsibility any longer. Now, stay with me. We're going to plow through the weeds and the snakes. Under state law, it's illegal to have unincorporated Vista La Mesa or any other incorporated spot with no fire protection stuck in between two incorporated cities. The neighborhood had to belong either to La Mesa or soon to be incorporated Lemon Grove. La Mesa hung tough. They voted early in 1976 to prevent our cityhood effort from getting on the ballot until it got control of Vista La Mesa. Mike Gotch was shocked. He protested La Mesa's my way or the highway attitude. He said LAFCO had followed the people's bidding. Vista La Mesa wanted to stay in Lemon Grove. Gotch protested La Mesa's 11th-hour assassination of Lemon Grove's election bid. He protested the county, which failed to take the dispute to its February meeting, when the issue might have been resolved in time for the June ballot. What a guy! Our St. Patrick! Thanks to all of this skullduggery, Lemon Grove lost $500,000 in sales, liquor, gas, and other local taxes that a new city could collect for its first fiscal year and not give back to the state. So ask yourself, who got the $500,000? Why, the county. Does that pass the smell test? I don't think so. County Supervisor Dick Brown had endorsed cityhood for Lemon Grove. He admitted the supervisors had dropped the ball in not defending the town after the LAFCO decision. Nice of him, but he was a lame duck, not running for re-election. There was one other good guy, and that was La Mesa City Councilman George Bailey, the only one of five to vote against his city's move to keep Lemon Grove off the June ballot. Bailey warned that La Mesa would net almost zip. And that's what happened, sort of. Vista La Mesa went to La Mesa, but it stayed in the Lemon Grove School District. Go figure. As Bailey and Gotch had predicted, La Mesa got barely a square mile and plenty of bad blood that lingered for years. Later on, Bailey ran for supervisor and won. Lemon Grove voted for him 2-1. Mike Gotch had a distinguished career in state government. He died of cancer in 2008. But the Mike Gotch Memorial Bridge is why you can ride your bike from Pacific Beach Drive to Mission Bay Drive. And little Lemon Grove, we became California's 414th city a year later. But better late than never. Our big lemon is still the only giant fruit next to a mass transit line in the USA. So remember, when life hands you lemons, show 'em what you're made of. Fight the good fight. The best is always yet to come. I'm Helen O'Field.
That was a marvelous reading, Helen. Thank you so much. And I understand that in celebration of Lemon Grove's 40th birthday, that you're writing a series of historical recollections that people can find on your new website. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, thank you for mentioning that, Miriam. Yes, between now and the end of June 2018, because that's when the 40th year will end, and then we just get to be 41 and not have any more parties. Mm-hmm. We are writing a series of blogs that will show up a couple of times a month on our new website.
Which is
www.lghistorical.org.
Fantastic. And I believe the city or historical society was also asking the public to send in recollections. Is that correct?
Indeed. And they are coming out of the walls. We're putting together something called the History Minute. So you get a minute, give or take, to give some important thing that happened to you in Lemon Grove in the last 40 years. And we have already videotaped six. The city council is going to screen one per city council meeting between now and the end of June.
Marvelous.
2018. It's so much fun.
Marvelous. So folks can turn out at those city council meetings to watch them. And if they want to send in a recollection of their own, how do they do that?
They do that by contacting Miranda Evans in the city manager's office. And her phone number is 619-825-3813.
And you can find that on the City of Lemon Grove's website as well. And if you want to email her, you can find it there.
Yes.
Helen, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners about the Historical Society or the City of Lemon Grove's 40th birthday celebration?
There's another 40 in the story. On September 7, we kick off the 40th season of our famous History Alive lecture series. It's all free. It's all wonderful. For all these years, that's 400 lectures, give or take, by this time.
Wonderful.
The most amazing people have shown up, very diverse, experts in many fields. And there we will be in the H. Lee House, our home base in Lemon Grove, 3205 Olive, presenting the 40th season. And we're going to lead off with a real hometown story. Mike Finch, the CEO of RCP Block and Brick, where you go and get all your landscaping stuff.
Yeah. This is a wonderful series where you really do bring history to life. It's a chance for people to come hear from these wonderful people and get some colorful tales of Lemon Grove's history.
Yes, indeed.
So you can find more of these stories and more information about the history of Lemon Grove at the Lemon Grove Historical Society's new website.
The new website is www.lghistorical.org. It's really pretty. I think you'll enjoy it.
Yeah, it's a beautiful site. Very exciting and just in time for the City of Lemon Grove's 40th anniversary. Listeners, if you just tuned in, we've been speaking with Helen Oldfield, the president of the Lemon Grove Historical Society. And I really want to thank you, Helen, for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you so much, Miriam. My pleasure.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
We'll have a preview of coming attractions, including the Ramona Country Fair, the Barona and Saquon Powwows, Descanso's Deep Pit Barbecue, Oktoberfests in La Mesa and El Cajon, the Alley Cat Art Walk, Julian Apple Festival, Julian Music Festival, Laguna Mountain Rendezvous, and more. The Ramona Country Fair will be held August 24th through the 27th at the Ramona Outdoor Community Center. Crafts, carnival rides, contests, vendors, live entertainment, fair food, and lots of fun are highlights of this event. A Western show and the second Ramona Motorcycle Rally are also being held this year. The fair is open Thursday and Friday evening, August 24th and 25th, and all day on Saturday and Sunday, August 26th and 27th. For full hours and details, visit the Ramona Country Fair's Facebook page.
Commemorative Air Force Air Group 1 invites you to attend the monthly breakfast meeting on Saturday, August 26th at 9 a.m. at their hangar on Gillespie Field in El Cajon. Guest speakers will include heroic World War II veterans speaking about their experiences, brave air crews that flew B-24s in England over the D-Day invasion, Iwo Jima and Berlin airlift, and more. There is an excellent opportunity to hear from the heroes that were there tell it in their own words. These men represent a piece of World War II living history that is rapidly disappearing. For more information, visit the Air Group 1 website at ag1caf.org.
Thelma, Stan, and Ollie will be the theme at the next gathering of the Saps at Sea, the Laurel and Hardy Sons of the Desert Association, in San Diego on August 26th at 7 p.m. at Trinity Church in Spring Valley. The event highlights works of Thelma Todd. This bubbly blonde was not only a highly respected actress and comedian, but a longtime favorite of the Saps, featured in several hilarious comedy clips that will be shown.
The 47th Annual Barona Powwow will be held September 1st through the 3rd at the Barona Reservation Powwow Grounds in Lakeside. Native American dancers from across the United States will compete for prizes, and the public is welcome to attend. You can also shop for Native American arts, crafts, jewelry items, and more, plus sample foods such as Indian fry bread tacos. For details, visit Barona Powwow on Facebook.
The Julian Music Festival celebrates the end of summer on September 16th at the Mangini Winery in Julian from 1 to 7 p.m. The festival features Americana, pop rock, Latin, jazz, adult contemporary, folk, Celtic music, and more. Tickets are required and are available at julianmusicfestival.com.
Savor the flavors of slow-cooked barbecue beef at Descanso's 80th Annual Deep Pit Barbecue on September 3rd from 11 to 5 p.m. at Our Lady of Light Catholic Church. In addition to the delicious food, you can enjoy boot scootin' country western music by Smith and Western, crafts, vendors, kids games, and prize drawing. For more information, visit eastcountymagazine.org and click on our events section.
The Julian Arts Guild will hold its fall art show on September 2nd, 3rd, and 4th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Julian Town Hall. This is a free event showcasing the works of talented Julian artists. Artworks displayed will include weaving, ceramics, gourd painting, drawing, and mixed media. For more information, you can visit julianartsguild.org.
The Sequon Band of the Kumeyaay Nation will host its 28th annual powwow on September 8th, 9th, and 10th at the Sequon Reservation's powwow grounds. The three-day tribal gathering attracts participants from across the nation and is open to the public. Sequon's powwow features traditional Native American dances, hand drum contest, bird singing and dancing competitions, authentic Indian cuisine, and more. You can find scheduling details at the Sequon Powwow Facebook.
The first annual Ramona Grape Stomp is set for September 9th from 12 noon to 5 p.m. at the Ramona Outdoor Community Center Pavilion to celebrate the harvest of grapes throughout the Ramona Valley. This fun family event will offer attendees the opportunity to squish grapes between their toes in grape stomping challenges, with prizes awarded to the best stompers. Attendees can also taste award-winning wine from local wineries and check out food, arts and crafts, and children's events. The Ramona Grape Stomp is being presented by the Ramona Rotary Club, the Ramona Senior Center, and the Ramona Valley Vineyard Association. Proceeds will benefit education and support services provided by these organizations. You can get tickets at RamonaGrapeStomp.com.
Lakeside's River Park Conservancy will present its 11th annual Once in a Blue Moon Gala and auction at the River Valley Equestrian Center on the evening of September 16th. You're invited to help honor partners in conservation to raise funds for science programs for kids. This year's event includes dinner and auction in an exhibition polo match. You can learn more about the Lakeside River Park Conservancy and get tickets for Once in a Blue Moon by clicking the Events tab at lakesideriverpark.org.
You're invited to the Alley Cat Art Walk on September 15th from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. Guests can enjoy an evening of art while visiting local galleries, also savoring food and drinks, plus live bluegrass and jazz music in the alley between Rea and East Main Street in downtown El Cajon. Arts and crafts vendors will have displays and products for sale, and guests can win prizes. Proceeds benefit St. Madeline Sophie Center, which assists developmentally disabled adults. For more information, you can visit stmsc.org.
If you love apples, the Julian Apple Days Festival on September 23rd and 24th is a place to be. Located at Mangini Winery in historic Julian, the event features Julian's famous apple pie, gold panning demonstrations, a falconry performance, live music and dancing, an antique tractor display, children's games and activities, a beer and wine garden, food and merchandise vendors, contest, and more. This festival harkens back to the early 1900s, when Julian won a prestigious award from an apple growers association and began a fall Apple Day festival. The town now has 2 month-long apple celebrations, culminating with the Apple Festival and the coronation of Mr. and Mrs. Apple Days. You can learn more at visitjulian.com and click on the calendar of events to find details on the Apple Days Festival and many more fall festivities.
Celebrating its 44th year, the popular La Mesa Oktoberfest will run from Friday, September 29th through Sunday, October 1st, bringing 3 days of Prost, or cheer. In addition to live German music and other entertainment, many vendors and crafts, you can also enjoy a beer garden serving up German and craft beers, plus new this year, craft cocktails. For more information, you can visit lamesaoktoberfest.org.
The German-American Club of San Diego hosts its annual Oktoberfest at its headquarters in El Cajon over 2 weekends, September 29th through October 1st, and again, October 6th through the 8th. You can feast on authentic German fare from roast ox on a spit to German pancakes, sauerkraut, and bratwurst. A German band flown in from Bavaria will perform German music ranging from polkas and waltzes to beer drinking songs. You'll also find vendors selling a variety of crafts. For details, you can visit GermanClubSanDiego.org.
Step back in time to a fur trading and colonial camp from the 1700s to 1840s at the Laguna Mountain Rendezvous. This event takes place October 13th through the 22nd at the Mataguay Scout Reservation in Santa Isabel. You can see demonstrations of survival skills such as cooking, archery, tomahawk throwing, black powder shooting, and tool making. For more information, you can visit the Laguna Mountain Rendezvous page on Facebook.
That's all for this week.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
See you around East County.
See you around East County.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine show. We're proud to announce the launch of the East County Dining Club. Each month, we'll be taking you to a different restaurant where you can savor cuisines from around the world without leaving East County. Our premier party to kick off our East County Dining Club will be this Friday night at Fabrice's French Country Restaurant in Hamul, and you're all invited. Our event features an all-you-can-eat French feast, wine tasting with Toast of the Coast winner Deerhorn Valley Vineyards, thousands of dollars in prizes, music, and surprises. This event benefits our nonprofit news reporting in the public interest for the East County Magazine radio show and our East County Wildfire and Emergency Alerts. RSVPs are required, so please visit our website at eastcountymagazine.org where you can get full details and reserve space, or call 619-698-7617. Bon appetit, and we hope to see you there on Friday.
Immigrant rights groups are calling President Trump's proposal to cut legal immigration by half racist and mean-spirited. On Wednesday, the president endorsed the Reforming American Immigration for a Strong Economy Act, or RAISE Act, which would favor English-speaking high-skilled immigrants and limit the ability of American citizens and legal permanent residents to bring certain relatives to the U.S., such as parents, siblings, and grandparents. Angelica Salas with the Coalition for Humane Immigrant Rights Los Angeles calls the proposal inhumane.
Families have always made our country strong, and I'm appalled that Republicans who say that they're the party of family values are destroying the family unity system in the immigration law.
The RAISE Act also eliminates the Green Card Lottery Diversity Program that brings in migrants from underrepresented countries, mostly in Africa and Asia. Wealthy investors would still be granted visas, but the number of refugees allowed in would be slashed, including those from countries where the United States is at war. Trump has said the bill would protect American jobs and lessen the welfare burden. Salas notes that California, with its booming economy, absorbs more legal immigrants than any other state, almost 210,000 in 2015.
Immigrants and their children make up half the population of California, and we are the sixth largest economy of the world. So if we are thriving, it's because of immigrant families, immigrant labor, immigrant contribution, and immigrant know-how.
Federal statistics show that more than 1 million people immigrated to the U.S. legally in 2015, which is higher than the year before, but lower than in 2005 or 2001. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, from the mountains to the sea.
If you see a pothole, graffiti, or other problem in San Diego's unincorporated communities, now you can download the county's Tell Us Now app, enabling you to take a photo and instantly submit a report. The app is available for Apple and Android phones. The Tell Us Now app is intended for reporting non-emergency problems to the county and enables you to track the progress of a reported problem, such as price gouging at gas pumps or grocery stores, abandoned vehicles, or code compliance violations. You can download the county's Tell Us Now app at the San Diego County App Center. If you live in the city of San Diego, there's a similar app called Get It Done. The county's App Center also has several other apps that you can download, including SD Emergency, which gives you tools to plan, prepare, and respond in an emergency. The Pulse Point app empowers people with CPR skills to be notified if someone nearby needs life-saving help. Finding Rover is an app that uses facial recognition for dogs to help owners find their lost dogs. Help us make sure that every lost dog is found. The VAPP app for veterans connects service members and military families to services. Fight the Bite lets you anonymously report green swimming pools, mosquito breeding areas, and dead birds for testing to help prevent West Nile virus. SD Beach Water Quality is an app that gives you water quality monitored daily, as well as notices of beach closures and advisories for all San Diego beaches. Where Can I Recycle lets you search by zip code to find a recycling center near you for bottles, cans, used motor oil, and filters. San Diego County Library has an app that lets you search for books, DVDs, audiobooks, and more on your mobile phone, as well as find a branch near you and check hours. My Parks is a mobile application that allows smartphone users to find and explore county parks near you and check on park hours, directions, and features. Breathe Well shows you real-time pollution levels on an hourly basis in your area. There are also apps to check public assistance benefits, pay your property taxes online, look up zoning on properties you're thinking of buying, learn how to improve your water quality, and more, all at the San Diego County App Center. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Valerie Watts.
Soon it will be back to school time when throngs of students will be walking, bicycling, driving, or riding buses to and from school. We were all kids once, so we know we can't count on them to be paying attention, says Fire Chief Sam DiGiovanna, author of the Chief's Corner column on East County Magazine. That's why it's important for all of us to use extra caution while driving in school zones. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration estimates that 75 school-age pedestrians are killed each year during school travel. These are preventable deaths. Here are some lessons to share for motorists to help protect children in our communities. It is illegal to pass a school bus that is stopped to load or unload children. School buses use yellow flashing lights to alert motorists that they are preparing to stop to load or unload kids. Red flashing lights and an extending stop sign arm signals to motorists that the bus is stopped and children are getting on or off the bus. So please be sure to stop. The 10 feet around a school bus is where children are in the most danger of being hit. Stop your car far enough from the bus to allow children space to safely enter and exit. Be alert. Children walking to or from their bus are usually very comfortable with their surroundings, and this makes them more likely to take risks, ignore hazards, or fail to look both ways when crossing the street. Drivers should not block the crosswalk when stopped at a red light or waiting to make a turn. Do not stop with a portion of your vehicle over the crosswalk either. In a school zone, when a warning flash or flashers are blinking, you must stop to yield the right-of-way to a pedestrian crossing the roadway within a marked crosswalk or at an intersection with no marked crosswalk. Remember, children are unpredictable and hard to see. Take extra care to look out for children not only in school zones, but also in residential areas, playgrounds, and parks. Don't honk your horn, rev your engine, or do anything to rush or scare a pedestrian in front of your car, even if you do have the legal right-of-way. And please, parents, teach your children to look both ways before crossing the street and not take chances. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, A.K. Jules, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.